Bonsoir. This is the Offside Rule Women's World Cup edition, nightly apparently, according to the Bonsoir. Bonjour, if you're listening to this in the morning. In association with Spotify, I'm Kate Borsay, and alongside me in the studio, she's here, she's there, she's everywhere. It's veteran of two World Cups, Claire Rafferty.
Veteran? Makes me feel old.
And fresh off the flight from Nice. A little bit late, but we forgive him. He's here. Nonetheless, it's women's football journalist for World Soccer magazine, Glenn Moore.
Good evening.
How was France, Glenn?
It was great. It was great.
A few hours ago, you were there.
Didn't rain quite as much as it is over here.
Yes. I feel like we're going to have to order some sort of waterproof sou'westers to go home in. Raf, your thoughts on England-Scotland, the game yesterday?
Yeah, I mean, the first half, England came out. Yeah, well, actually, they rode a storm for the first 10 minutes. I think Scotland started the better of the
two. Nice weather analogy dropped in there early doors. Thank you.
I think it was quite hot there. They seemed a little bit sweaty, didn't they, in the close-ups. But yeah, first 10 minutes, Scotland were all guns blazing as expected. England weathered that storm and they really grew into the half. Obviously, you know, getting that early penalty really, really took the wind out of Scotland's sails. And the second half was a little bit lacklustre, I think, because England was so in control of the game. And then obviously Claire Emslie then got that goal back, which made it a little bit more interesting. But I still don't think they had enough to even really test England.
All right, so not huge plaudits for Scotland there. They've been well received in the media generally, Glenn. But how about over in France? How's the tournament being received there?
Just add to that point. What doesn't come across if you watch it on TV at home is the conditions. And it was very hot.
It was muggy,
and sticky.
Wasn't it?
It was very muggy. Yeah, it's one of those sort of... And there had been like little storms, sort of 5-10 minute storms over the last few days in Nice. It's a very muggy feel and that's very difficult to play in. So, I mean, there is that aspect that sometimes you don't see when you sit at home that you don't appreciate that necessarily. And I think it's difficult. On pitch side, you don't get much air either, which makes it more difficult. Yeah, so hard to breathe. I mean, certainly, I mean, Beth Mead cramped up and the players were struggling a bit towards the end. So that, I think, did affect performances to an extent. Though you could argue, obviously, the Scots are playing in the same conditions and they showed a bit of energy in the second half. In France, generally, I was at the opening game in Paris and the atmosphere was brilliant. I mean, 40,000 plus in the stadium.
Yeah, France versus South Korea, that one.
Yeah, and France played,
amazingly.
Came out superbly. I mean, it was interesting looking at them in the tunnel beforehand. France looked really nervous.
Oh, really?
And they were very emotional singing the national anthem. The South Koreans looked incredibly relaxed. And then when they came out, and just blew the South Koreans away completely. Yeah, yeah. Played some really nice football. Henry was superb. Good finishes. Could have scored more. Yeah, got comfortably 3-0 up. And there was a Mexican wave. There was a weird bit where they all put their
did you start it?
Phone lights on. No, the media never do it. We always get booed because we... And they had a bit where they put the torchlights on the phones. It's probably been a Bob Dylan concert or, yeah, for younger,
wow,
for,
the glitz.
For younger listeners.
But
generally, there was still, yeah, it felt like a proper match. It felt like a proper World Cup match. With the only difference being it's females on the pitch. Yeah, having been to several World Cups.
Well, that's
it's
nice.
Just like a normal occasion.
Yeah.
And although the organisation had its flaws, there are always some kind of hiccups, particularly the opening games. And yeah, FIFA did put the whole, you know, all the signage and all the sort of officials and a lot of security there. I mean, President Macron was there and a real sense of an occasion around the game. What there isn't so much is outside the stadia, and it's applied in Nice as well, you wouldn't know there was a World Cup going on. It's a bit like, to be honest, in England, you wouldn't know there's a cricket World Cup going on.
But it doesn't forgive a lack of advertising. And we spoke to Susie Rack, actually, on Friday about how, you know, she'd struggled to find any posters there for it at all, and that the men's French football team had taken precedent over advertising, and Roland Garros was obviously taking precedence as well. But in Nice, it's unforgivable, really, isn't it? Because, you know, that's a major football venue. You've got England versus Scotland, a hotly anticipated match. And that's not just because, you know, there are some of our home nations, but widely anticipated. And yet I hear stories of people struggling to get to the game, shuttle buses, which no one knew about. People tried to get shuttle buses home and were dumped in car parks. Other people had to get Ubers home. That's a shambles, isn't it?
I think they ultimately... They expected the rest of the stadium to be filled by the locals, and that just wasn't the case. Maybe that's down to the lack of information about the fact the tournament's even going on. I was listening earlier to a radio station, and a French football specialist dialed in, and he actually said that Nice men's do struggle to fill that stadium as well. So I think, is
Could
Nice a football
thing.
Hub? I think, yeah, when we reflect on Paris, that, you know, that it's a home nation, so they're obviously going to draw in the crowds. But I think for, you know, the other nations, they may struggle to fill the stadiums.
Well, unlike those watching in the stadium in Nice, there were some great figures in terms of TV for the England-Scotland game. Peak audience of 6.1 million and 37.8% share of the available audience, making it the UK's most watched women's football game of all time. Which is great, right, Raf?
Oh, yeah. I think, you know, it's what we've been working to and what we've been building on over the course of the last 4 years since the last World Cup. And I think that expectation and the pressure that's on the England team is reflected in the fact that people want to watch it. People want to see if England are going to win. And yeah, I think the sponsors who bought in early on have probably got it on the cheap. Seeing them figures, they'll be rubbing their hands together.
There are question marks, I think, over here in England, though, about how many people are genuinely engaged with it outside our kind of media bubble and outside fans of football. Someone who might help, though, is Etty. You've bought us the official France 2019 World Cup mascot, daughter of Footix. And let's not forget the insane voiceover that introduced Etty to the World Cup stage.
It's time, Etty. It's your time to shine.
Absolutely freaks me out every time. And completely different to the kind of duck figure. She's got several fingers. I'm not sure what that says about her.
She's making a goalkeeper, I think.
I will pop a picture up on the Offside Rule Pod's Instagram and Twitter at Offside Rule Pod. By the way, head over to our website. We've got full game analysis of that England-Scotland tie, as well as lots of other previews of games to look forward to and interviews and much, much more on the World Cup. Glenn, quick one as to how the game was received in France in terms of the newspaper coverage. You've got a copy of L'Équipe over there, which is the sporting paper, right, if you're over in France?
It is the only big paper, yes. The newspaper coverage is very different to ours. They have one big sports paper and the other papers don't do a lot of sport.
And it says, as their headline for the game, une victoire longue tirée. Which is a bit weird because it seems to mention a tongue and I got a bit confused about that. And I was like, what the hell has a tongue got to do with England? I asked my French friend to translate the stand first, the bit below it, and she's basically told me that it says England were brilliant before being scared, shaky in front of Scotland due to their fast rhythm and heat. So I think when they say long tiré, they refer to, you know, what dogs do when they're hot. So sticking their tongues out and a bit like...
Panting.
Yes, essentially, yes. So
I didn't see any of that, to be fair, during the game.
Quite
I get
an odd analogy. Glenn, you've got the latest from England. We've had a few lines today on injuries.
Yes, yes, stop before I look it up.
Glenn is currently picking up his phone and looking at the media WhatsApp group, which has how many members, Glenn? It must be 50-odd of you on this.
At least 50
on
now,
this
yes.
Secret WhatsApp group.
Not so secret now.
Not so secret now, listeners. Wouldn't you love to be on this group, huh? Sharing the best of British media at this World Cup. Glenn.
The latest news of the England camp is that Millie Blight, whose shoulder was hurt, I think, in a collision with Erin Cuthbert,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, actually, I think she ended up kicking the back of her own feet, to be fair, when she fell over.
I don't think she did herself any... I think she went in heavy and she fell heavy, and I'd say that was...
A bit clumsy, to be honest.
Yeah, I'd say the same.
Anyway, it was it's not serious, but she was rested today from training as a precaution. Tony Duggan, who obviously missed the game, she has a thigh injury and she was rested also from training and doing some gym work. And Demi Stokes finally trained today.
Oh, very detailed indeed. Great. Thank goodness for that WhatsApp group. All right, well, let's get into today's action. Our first VAR-free day, folks. I feel like that's worthy of a celebration.
So we could probably be done with some VAR today.
Yeah.
Well, exactly. The lack of VAR might tell you more about the lack of goal action. Alors on danse. Alors on danse. Let's start with Argentina-Japan. A goalless end to the second match of Group D saw Argentina earn their first ever point in the history of the World Cup. So well done to them. Former finalist Japan, however, will come away disappointed with their opening performance as they failed to convert any of their chances. Argentina celebrated the draw like a win. They did grow into the game. Better second half performance. How good were those reactions at full time, Glenn?
Well, they were delighted. Understandably, everyone's gone into the tournament writing them off. They went several years without even playing a game. It's been very difficult for the players there. I mean, at one point, I think they were going to go strike because they weren't getting their $10 a day per diem expenses, and then mind getting actually paid to play. So having come on that journey to come to the World Cup and to get a draw against a team that's been the last two finals, it's quite an achievement.
Not a lot of talk going into the World Cup about Japan being serious contenders. Raf, did the game demonstrate why?
So Japan for me, you know, they won in 2011, obviously beat us in the semi-final in 2015, and you know, they've always been there and thereabouts. But you know, we were saying earlier, weren't we, has Argentina improved that much, or have Japan really dropped off that much? I think what's happened is their youth hasn't come through. They've been reliant on some of the older players, and unfortunately their style of play and their lack of physicality is making these games really challenging for them.
And also basic errors, like the number of foul throws that just weren't right.
Yeah, I thought I was bad at throwing, but I saw some of them today and I thought they need to be practicing them in training a little bit more, because that's just
which
basics.
Which is shocking for a Japan side. So I guess the question is, are they all about the technicality and not enough physicality, Glenn?
Yes, but there always have been. It hasn't stopped me getting to the last two finals. I mean, group games, teams do grow into a tournament. I mean, 2011, England beat Japan, and as you well remember, Raph.
Yeah, I mean, that was an Ellen White goal, wasn't it? A fantastic lob, I think. And yeah, they went on to win. So kind of means in 2011... we could have won as well.
I mean,
definitely.
On the other side, I was at the game when Switzerland beat Spain in the first game of 2010. Spain went on to win the World Cup.
Well, for Argentina, something about that number 10 shirt, Raf, Estefani Bonini, playing at that number, a lot of legacy to inherit, I suppose, and really trying to drive them forward.
Yeah, that shirt could potentially weigh heavy, but to be fair, she was the bright spark. She tried her hardest to create, even though they didn't have a great deal of possession. And I think in the end, she was awarded Woman of the Match for her efforts. But if Argentina want to, you know, go on and actually get a win in the group stages, they need to get her on the ball. She's the creative link, and she is one of the positive driving forces for them, and she'd be one to look out for.
England would have watched that game with great interest. I mean, that would have been assumed 3 points, Argentina. Mm. Yeah, they've hardly played for several years. They've looked at that game, and bearing in mind the New Zealand game quite recently when England struggled to break down a very deep defence, they're going to be working on how do we get round them, what can we do that Japan didn't do. I mean, obviously, England came more of an aerial threat, but they will be looking at that game and feeling this isn't a guaranteed 3 points on Friday in the Harbour.
Scotland as well, you know, they must be concerned about Argentina's performance.
Well, indeed, because they're guaranteeing on winning that game to try and get in a third place or second place. Yeah, so it's quite interesting. Certainly made the group a bit more interesting than it had looked originally.
Well, commentating on Argentina-Japan for the BBC, our first draw at this World Cup. No goals at all. Robin Cowan, tell us how it looked from your point of view, because it can be tough, can't it, when you've not got a lot to commentate on.
Yeah, those are the games that really test you, to be honest. Although it was easier than I thought it would be, because the story was Argentina, who obviously came into this World Cup with such a terrible record from their two previous appearances. And in the press room beforehand, people were predicting the score, and we had 5-0, 4-0, 6-0 to Japan. And it really didn't pan out like that.
I think
the fact that Argentina have players who play abroad now, play in decent leagues, and they just seemed to know what they were doing. They didn't really have many clear-cut efforts themselves, except for a few minutes at the beginning of the second half. They looked comfortable, to be honest. They looked so disciplined. Their coach has done so well with them, and Japan barely threatened.
And this is a team that, in their opening game of the World Cup in 2007, lost 11-0 to Germany. So I'm not surprised that you were predicting those kind of scorelines. Look, the game was a little while ago. I have to say thank you to you, because you've had a few glasses of wine. on a professional level, all I can say is I hope it was a French wine, was it, Robin?
Of course. We have to be on brand here. But being 5'1", I can't have too much. I mean, just one is usually enough to tip me over the edge. So I'm being a bit emotional already.
Okay. Well, talking about emotional, Argentina at that final whistle looked really emotional, didn't they?
Yeah, incredible. I mean, it looked like they'd won the World Cup. And in a way, they sort of did. You know, unfortunately for some teams coming into this World Cup, like them and Jamaica, they're really neglected, their women's team, from their respective FAs. They don't listen to them and really pay any attention until, oh, suddenly there's a tournament to qualify for. Can you put a team together? So the fact that they were there means so much. And the fact now that they managed to get a point, their first point ever of a Women's World Cup at the third attempt against former champions, it means a lot more than that to them, because this might mean that their Argentinian FA might sit up and actually take notice and give them a little bit more support.
I hope it does. Japan surprising from them, really, and it's obvious that they're not where they're at 4 years ago.
Yeah.
I've seen and heard a few stories about them prioritising the 2020 Olympics, which is, of course, held in Japan, so that might be where their focus is. But even so, this is the World Cup.
Absolutely, yeah, and that's the story that's really been circulating, that they are determined to medal and possibly get the gold in, well, next year when it's their home Olympics. And so the tactic for that is to blood as many youngsters as possible in this tournament. You know, the substitutions that the coach made, two teenagers coming off the bench. So we'll see if that pays off. But yeah, you're absolutely right. There's a tournament going on right here, right now. And Group D is really, really tough.
Yeah,
you know, there's no guarantees you're going to get out of that.
In the other game of the day, Canada beat Cameroon 1-0. But they'll be left frustrated, really. 3 points, of course, the key factor. But their side didn't take chances, particularly as the game drew to a close. Cameroon can take some credit for keeping them at bay. What was your assessment of Canada, though, Glenn? And could you tell Cameroon didn't play many warm-up games before the tournament?
Well, given how few games they'd played, I suppose our organisers were defensively, but they did struggle to get the ball forward to support their striker. You could argue the game, the result was quite predictable. In 2019, Canada played 10 games. They've only conceded one goal to Nigeria. They've only scored 9 goals. So they are a team that once they get ahead, they tend not to sort of concede very often.
Are we calling them boring, Canada, from this point? Yeah, OK, Raf, thank you.
Early on, I'm going for it. They are dull, but they get the win. So
yeah,
who cares at the end of the day? You know, they've got the 3 points.
Goal scorer Khadija Buchanan, someone we saw in Canada, you were up against her. She was the youngest player, I think, in the Canada squad at that time. One of many Lyon players at this World Cup. By the way, we tried to calculate this early. We think there are around 15 Lyon players at this World Cup.
The odds are very high, with the final being Lyon, that there will be a Lyon player on the pitch.
Yes, I think we can safely say that. Raf, you came up against Khadija Buchanan in England's game against Canada, in which they deposited the hosts in 2015 on Canada Day, we should say.
Yes,
that.
We did.
And you were
best
telling
day
me
ever.
You were telling me earlier that this was your highlight game of the World Cup in 2015.
Yeah, it really stands out to me. Whenever someone asks me, you know, what's your career highlight, I always look back to that game, I think, because the pressure was on Canada to win. It was on Canada Day. There was thousands
and
thousands
of red. And it was a very open stadium. It was
in
hot,
the stadium,
wasn't it,
and
in there?
And we scored quite early on from a mistake at the back. And I just remember kind of laughing to myself, thinking, oh my God, we might actually progress here. But yeah, talking about Sinclair, she managed to pop up and score in that game as well. And even though she didn't really, you know, they didn't create a lot then, they haven't really changed a great deal for me. You know, squad's quite similar.
Yeah,
they've got a few players coming through, but defence is very recognisable, and as you said, Buchanan.
It feels predictable,
yeah,
doesn't it? And Buchanan, has she matured since the last World Cup? Is she someone who we think, you know, actually she's now one of their key players, I suppose?
Yeah, she'll be one of the standout centre-backs of this tournament. The experience of her, you know, going to Lyon now, she broke onto the stage in 2015 after a great World Cup then. So she has a pressure on her shoulders to lead her a team. I think, you know, obviously you've got the likes of Sinclair who take a bit of limelight, but equally she's got their reputation now. But today she scored and got woman of the match, so she's starting on the right foot.
Well, the youngest player this time round, Glenn, Jessie Fleming, we've spoken a little bit about her in the build-up, but what did you make of her performance?
Well, she tended to start dropping deeper and deeper as the game went on to come and get the ball, because, you know, faced with this mass green wall of players ahead of her, and players do tend to do that after a while, but you really want your best players where it's going to hurt the opposition. So, and there are other players in midfield who can do that job, so sometimes you need someone sort of saying, yeah, get back up there. One of the midfielders, get back up there where you can hurt them. I mean, you see it in quite often, you know, teams, you know, where creative players go looking for the ball because they're not getting the service.
Christine Sinclair, you've mentioned her already, Raf, still on 181 career goals. She needs 4 more to break this record by the USA's Abby Wambach, the record of 184. Wouldn't it be awful if she didn't do it in this tournament?
Yeah, but
sorry, that's really cruel.
In today's game, she did miss a few chances, so, you know, she could have got at least 2 closer to that.
How do you rate her chances of doing this? She should do
it,
right?
Obviously, it depends how far they go in the competition, but she should do. She had the opportunity today. She will reflect on them and probably be a bit disappointed. But she seems quite ageist. She doesn't ever change what she does. It looks like she doesn't do a great deal, but she's always there, you know, picking up the pieces and getting a little snapshot. She reminds me a little bit of, obviously, it's not the same work rate as Ellen, but the way that she still scores, even if she's not that effective.
Yeah, I can totally see the similarity with Ellen White. Sometimes you don't think that they're in and around or on the ball much, and then they suddenly pop up with that all-important goal. All right, well, let's turn our attention now to tomorrow's games.
Hello, listeners. This is producer Ben from the Totally Football Show here in Casa del Muddy in Portugal, where we have now finished our run of Totally Nations League shows. They're available on Spotify and discuss all the important things in life, like when a sandwich isn't a sandwich.
Well, we went to get the typical Porto sandwich, which is called the francesinha, the little Frenchie. There's nothing French about it, and it's certainly not little.
It's got like sirloin steak and sausage and ham. It's served on a bed of gravy. There's a fried egg on the top, and then over the top of the fried egg with a little hole for the yolk is layer and layer and layer of melted cheese.
And the Welsh word for a microwave.
Microdon. And not pop de ping.
Now, over on the regular Totally Football Show feed this week, we've got James Horncastle speaking to the Oscar-winning director Asif Kapadia about his new documentary Diego Maradona.
Eventually, he got a bit peed off and he just looked at me and said, "You know, you've got a nerve. You've got a nerve asking me these questions to my face. But for that, I respect you."
And on Thursday, James Horncastle is back, talking to Michael Cox about the Juventus sides of the mid-90s as part of our series on Michael's fabulous new book, Zonal Marking. Stay up to date by following us on social media at The Totally Show.
This is the Offside Rule Women's World Cup edition in association with Spotify. Joining me, Kate Borsay, Claire Rafferty and Glenn Moore. Tomorrow, well, we're looking forward to seeing defending champions USA in action at this World Cup. We'd probably want them to face stiffer competition in this first game, but, you know, it has to be done as they face Thailand in the evening kickoff. Will USA, though, Glenn, have paid any attention to the flying start from France?
I'm sure they will. Yeah. I mean, because they're scheduled at the moment to meet them in the quarterfinals. So they will be paying very close attention to the French. I think they're already trying to put the pressure on the French, as all teams do. It's, you know, you're always trying to talk down your chances and talk up everyone else's chances, manage expectations. So you could argue the French have put down a marker so far.
And the USA, Ralph, what are you most looking forward to seeing from them? We obviously saw them play England in the She Believes Cup, but this is a different prospect, isn't it?
Being a fullback myself, I like to see the two fullbacks bombing on, Dunn and O'Hara. Are very athletic and will get up and down and cause issues, and they do create a lot of chances from crosses into the box. So I think that will be exciting to watch. And I know their defence has been criticised as well recently. So I think obviously, you know, against the likes of Thailand, it is slightly favourable opposition. But moving forward in the competition, I'd like to see quite a few goals from them.
Are we going to see a different kind of lineup from Jill Ellis, Glenn, because of the competition, because Thailand are likely not to present much of a threat to USA? Are we likely to see players like Mallory Pugh, who aren't, you know, nailed on starters?
Quite possibly. I mean, they've got the first two games. I suspect she might well rotate in those two games before they play Sweden. If they win those two games, then they've qualified. It may be a case, particularly when coming first in the group, may not necessarily be a good thing. We can rotate the third game as well. So it is an opportunity to sort of change all each match.
Well, over in France, writing for The Guardian and also author of the national team, the inside story of the women who changed soccer is Caitlin Murray, and she caught up with producer Abby.
I'm here at the stadium. There was just the pre-match press conference with Jill Ellis and Alex Morgan, and then the players had a walk around the field to inspect it, although the players just took selfies. I don't know what the point of the field inspection is, but that happened, and now I'm sitting in the stadium outside overlooking the stadium, which now just has a bunch of pigeons walking around on it.
Let's move on to the big talking point. Everyone has been talking about Hope Solo's comments. For those who haven't heard them yet, these are comments about Jill Ellis, the women's team coach. And Hope Solo said about Ellis that she relies heavily on her assistant coaches. She cracks under the pressure quite a bit, but often that doesn't matter because the quality of the players on the pitch is so superb. And she didn't want us to see our mistakes. She wanted to brush them under the carpet. So she just wants to stroke the egos of players. How has that gone down in America?
Well, it's definitely become a talking point, especially, you know, the U.S., they're opening this tournament against Thailand, and then they're going to play Chile. And no offense to those teams, of course, but I think the full expectation is that the U.S. is just going to sort of easily get through these games. So there's not really much intrigue in those matchups to talk about. So Hope Solo's comments have definitely sort of caught like wildfire, and the players and Jill Ellis have been asked about them at every opportunity since Hope Solo made those comments. tonight, Jill Ellis was asked specifically, and her reaction was, you know, comments are comments. She said, I have processes to make the decisions that I make. I've made a lot of big decisions, but there's reason behind them. And she said that the focus within the team right now is just internal. They're not worried about what anyone on the outside has to say. They talk a lot about their bubble. When Julie Ertz and Alyssa Nair were asked yesterday about Hope's comments, they said they hadn't seen them and they weren't aware of them because they've been off social media. They're in the little bubble that the team creates for the World Cup and they're just not paying attention.
Well, away from the Hope Solo comments, did we get any indication as to what the USA's starting 11 might be against Thailand?
Well, I think that the starting 11 has been pretty set for a while now. Jill Ellis was asked about Carly Lloyd's role. We all know at this point that Carly Lloyd is not a starter for this team. You know, she was the hero in 2015, but things have changed in the past 4 years. She's going to be coming off the bench. Carly Lloyd has been very vocal about the fact that she's not happy about that. She thinks she should be a starter. And Jill Ellis was asked specifically about that, whether Carly Lloyd's very public opposition to being a substitute was a problem. And Jill just sort of laughed and she said, no. I mean, she said, I've coached Carly for years. This is how Carly is. You want players who believe that they can impact games and that they are the best. It's not an issue at all, she said.
USA are the favorites, or were the favorites, going into the tournament. From the opening night, France looked very strong. Are the USA looking at France now as the major contenders to challenging them for that overall title?
Yeah, that's been a question that has come up a lot, actually. And, you know, the U.S. is hesitant to talk about other opponents. They insist that they are only focused on Thailand. They are only focused on this first game. They're not really looking at what the other teams are doing. But they are willing to admit that France looked very good. I think Megan Rapinoe the other day said, the pressure's all on France. They are the favorites. And, you know, I think that is an interesting way to look at it, because I think with the U.S. ranked number one in the world, with the U.S. being the reigning World Cup champions, you would think that the pressure's sort of on them. And they've sort of given that pressure to France and said that that pressure's not ours. The pressure's on the hosts right now. I do think France has looked pretty good. I think if the U.S. was feeling a little nervous about maybe having to face them in the quarterfinal, they certainly wouldn't admit that. But I mean, they've been very complimentary about the French team, and it's been a question that's come up a lot. So I'm sure it's something that they're thinking about as they look ahead to the bracket and how things could kind of turn out with them potentially meeting each other in a pretty early round.
Thanks very much to Caitlin Murray, author and journalist. Some interesting comments there, Raf. Just want to pick up on Hope Solo as well, about USA coach Jill Ellis and the fact that Jill would not show any of the goals that the side had conceded to her players. She didn't believe that it would be mentally a good thing for them to do. What's your take on that, though?
I think ultimately players want to reflect on what's happened, and I'm sure they would have been given access to the games and the goals and been able to review themselves. But it's down to Jill and, you know, what she thinks is conducive to good performances and what gets the best out of her players. And I don't know if that's factual. Obviously, Hope said it, but it might just be on one occasion. You know.
It seems bizarre for me, though. But has that ever happened in your career? Would you look at every goal that you'd conceded?
You know what? Managers are different, and some really scrutinise and love detail. Some kind of do brush over things, and that does depend on the mentality of the team. If you just come off the back of three losses, you don't really want to be focusing on a lot of the negatives. You want to try and think about what you've done so well. Personally, I'd like to see all the goals. I'd like to see who's done wrong, who hasn't, because it's about taking responsibility for your actions. And I think she's a leader and a winner, isn't she, Hope Solo? She obviously wants the best out of everyone and everyone to pull together.
But what message does that give to the team, Glenn, if Jill Ellis is saying, look, I'm not going to show you that because effectively I don't think it's relevant. I don't think you're going to gain from it mentally. Surely that's her saying, well, her team's mentally fragile.
Well, we've only got one side of the story, of course. She made
me notice both of you are very like, well, you know, so are we saying that Hope Solo is causing a few ruptions and might be enjoying her role for the BBC, creating contentious remarks for the media? I don't know.
Well,
she's using a platform.
Using a platform. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, from a journalist point of view, she's great.
Of course.
That's what you want.
Me too.
People talk and say things in controversy. And I mean, even then, I mean, you'd imagine, yeah, if what she's saying did happen, you'd imagine though Ellis would be looking at the tapes herself, her coaches, and if there was a problem that kept occurring, then would take action. If it's just a one-off here or there, then maybe not. But
if there's standout errors, the manager will 100% have pulled that player who's done that. Probably didn't want to almost publicly embarrass the player or players who haven't done their role. But yeah, it's about accountability for me.
And Raph, what about Carly Lloyd's comments? She's obviously upset that she feels that she's not in that sort of guaranteed starting berth.
Yeah, you know, if it was about opinions, I almost feel like she's had her time. I don't want to speak too soon. She'll probably score another 4 goals and Sinclair won't be able to catch her. But yeah, for me, you know, it's about bringing in different options, and they're not a one-trick pony anymore. You've got the likes of Rapinoe, Tobin Heath up there. So it is frustrating for a player if you've not selected and you think you can still do a good job. Equally, it's sometimes about picking the right characters, and if you have a character that you think is going to disrupt the team,
yeah,
that can be dangerous.
I did wonder about that, because obviously Hope Solo is banned,
yeah,
and will no longer return. She's already said that she's not going to return back to international football after her comments about Sweden. So she's out the picture.
Yeah.
Is this Jill Ellis's way of managing Carly Lloyd out of
it's
the
risk,
picture?
It's risk reward, isn't it? If she feels like she can still offer off the pitch, then she's going to bring her. If she's going to disrupt too much, then it might have been a potential mistake.
Or could this be what Carly needs to reassess?
Possibly, but I mean, I covered the England men's team for a long time, and some players, it becomes a bit of a circus around them. You know, I think of Beckham in the past, the John Terry, Stephen Gerrard thing in 2010, and you know how Gareth Southgate eased Wayne Rooney out of the picture when he was no longer a starting player. Sometimes figures are so big, if they're there, they have to play. Otherwise, you're probably better off without them in the squad.
USA up against Thailand. The Thailand team, Glenn, you know, this is a tough one for them. But where are their strengths? Where might they try and contain the USA?
I suspect that they will take a lot of encouragement from Argentina, from South Africa's performance until they were undone by VAR. And they will basically, you know, in parlance, park the bus, get everybody behind the ball and see how long they can frustrate America.
Well, the second kickoff of the day is a chance to see the final of our World Cup debutantes in action as Chile play Olympic silver medalist Sweden. Sweden, they're domestically strong, aren't they, Raph? But they struggle to really match that on the world stage. They've lost this year to Portugal, Canada and Germany. What players might help them to beat that hex?
They have a huge array of talent and experience amongst their ranks. Hedvig Lindau is, for me, one of the best goalkeepers in the world, and she has been for a long time. She's been fantastic for Chelsea for years and really allowed us to get to the next level. So I have a lot of respect for Hedvig, you know, and then the back line, you've got Fischer and Sagar and Eriksson. So all these players have played in big games. They know how to win games and they know, you know, how to manage games. And that's what's important.
Is it going to be a problem that Hedvig's not played much for Chelsea since Christmas?
No, I don't think so. I know the players want to be playing as much as possible and goalkeepers need that exposure, but she's been in that position before. I know she's been training very hard behind the scenes, and it has been frustrating for her, you know, since Christmas. But I think she's been training for this World Cup, and she's got that focus. And she's quite a serious character. So she'll when the time's right, I think she'll step up.
Yeah, she'll definitely apply herself. Well, it's important to find out how the Swedish rate their prospects. So we've caught up with David Berg, who writes for the Offside magazine in Sweden. So, of course, we had to get him on. And he began with a word on their big goalkeeper.
Hedvig Lindahl is clearly number one. We need her routine from the big games. And Sergira Musovic and Jennifer Falkis, they haven't really been tested on this level yet. So I really think that no doubt it will be Hedvig Lindahl between the posts.
And who else should we be looking out for someone who doesn't know the Sweden team so well?
Fridolina Rolfö, the attacker, made a very good game against South Korea, and she is in a very good form right now. So at the offense, absolutely Fridolina Rolfö. And I think the midfielder Elin Rubensson has also had a very good season in Gothenburg in Sweden. So I think those two you shall really look out for.
And Caroline Seger coming towards the end of her career, but preparing for her fourth World Cup here.
She will also be very important with her great routine, and she's still a very good player. But she has had some troubles with her back. But she will definitely start, I think. But it's a bit questions raised about her recent form.
Thank you very much to David Berg, writes for the Offside magazine. It's bound to be a great success. Glenn, what can we expect from Chile, and can they take heart from Argentina's performance today?
I expect they will, yes. They finished ahead of Argentina in the Copa America Femenina to qualify, and they will see what Argentina did. Maybe we can do as well. They've also got a good goalkeeper, of course, in Christine Endler, who briefly was at Chelsea and PSG. So that always helps if you're going to be under pressure for a bit, an experienced goalkeeper.
Well, the first kickoff of the day, New Zealand take on the Netherlands. And we're looking forward to this one, seeing the European champions in action. Raf, let's talk about the Netherlands first. You've played with or against several of their key players, Vivian Miedema, Danielle van der Donk, Lieke Martins. The list goes on, doesn't it? A lot of stars in that lineup.
Yeah, and it's surprising to say that they struggled in qualification after fantastic Euros, winning that unexpectedly. I think, you know, because of that struggle, they're not really seen as one of the favourites, but I do think they are. On paper, they've got some fantastic players, as you just mentioned. Miedema, top goal scorer in WSL. Jackie Gronin, who was at Chelsea for a little bit.
She's gone to Man United now, isn't she?
Such a great talent. I always remember in training, she was so technically able and fearless. The expectation from them, you know, that I don't think it'll weigh as heavy as other major teams, but that they will be the dark horse, so to speak, and I wouldn't be surprised to see them in the latter stages.
They've also got that growth in they've actually won a tournament, and that really does make a difference.
And recently, very, very much so. Well, I'm looking forward to seeing them in action. Here's a little factette for you. The New Zealand team's nickname, the Football Ferns, came from a competition that was run in the national paper. How about that? They did manage to frustrate England in that warm-up game before this World Cup got underway, Glenn. There's been a managerial change there as well.
The England game was interesting because they struggled to start with, but once they got themselves organised, I mean, Abby Ersek's a very, very good player. Where they have a problem, of course, is scoring goals, and they did get one against England, but Hannah Wilkinson's just come back from a bad injury and probably has been rushed back because they're a bit short of options. And a few days later, they lost to Wales. So, you know, who obviously just missed out on the finals, but they lost 1-0 to Wales. So it's quite hard to predict. I think they're going to struggle to score goals.
OK, well, predictions for tomorrow, please. Who are we going to be talking about in the next edition of this Daily Show? Morgan, Endler, Miedema or someone else? Who's going to take the spoils tomorrow if we start with USA, Thailand?
USA.
Obvs, OK.
USA.
Chile, Sweden?
Sweden.
Obvs.
Ooh, Chile.
Ooh, Raf, I like the fact you're mixing it up there. New Zealand, Netherlands?
Netherlands, for sure.
Yeah, Netherlands.
OK, all right. Well, the big players in action tomorrow. Raf, you're off to Nice tomorrow.
I am. I'm going to bed as soon as I get in as well. I haven't packed anything, but I did just go shopping, so I've got a fresh outfit for tomorrow.
And you're covering a game?
Yes, Norway-France, so I'm looking forward to that.
Yeah, that'll be a really good game on Wednesday, and you'll be there for the BBC, so we'll make sure that we're tuning in to watch you. I shall text you on the outfit choice.
Yeah, please do. I want a thumbs up.
And Glenn, yourself, you go back to France, don't you, a little later in the tournament?
I go back for England-Argentina in Le Havre on Friday.
Oh, on Friday, so soon. There we go, in and out, jetting all over the place. Well, I feel very pedestrian sat here opposite you two because I'm going nowhere apart
going
from
home.
The jazz basement with no windows and a lot of rain outside. Thank you both for your contributions today. We'll get you both a boat home, I think, to manage with all this rainfall. Well, whilst you wait for our next podcast, please spread the word to friends and followers. We'll be putting more on our social media. In the meantime, it's at Offside Rule Pod everywhere you look. And we've got our website, offsiderulepodcast.com, full breakdowns of the England-Scotland game. Some good stuff on there, actually, as well as other previews and interviews. Tons of stuff to look forward to during this World Cup. That's it from me. In the words of Lindsay Hooper, merci, au revoir, petit pois.
The Offside Rule Women's World Cup Edition is a Muddy Knees Media production in association with Spotify.